present Teddy Johnson as Steve Gardner in The Candle of Darkness, a serial thriller in six parts by Edward Boyd. The Candle of Darkness, Part 2.
I swear to you, or my name isn't Steve Gardner, there's nothing so quiet as a little seaside town in winter. When you have a homicidal maniac loose, when you're almost lynched just for being out after dark, and the man you've come up from London to see is behaving very strangely, and the police are hostile, when you wake up at night in a crumbling household with a voice repeating a poem in your ear.
All right, Jimmy, what about this voice?
It was him again.
Who?
Francis. Francis Lennox.
You mean you recognize the voice?
Yes.
Then why don't you go and punch him in the mouth?
Because Francis Lennox has been dead for years.
Sit down, Jimmy. How long has this been going on?
The voice?
That'll do to start with.
4 years.
Every night?
I wish it was.
Why do you say that?
If it was every night, I could get used to it. It's not knowing when. That's the killer.
You couldn't be mistaken. I mean, one whisper's pretty well like another.
Francis Lennox and I were born within 2 years of each other. We lived practically next door. We went to the same school. One time we had the same kind of crush on the same girl. We were in Korea together. We were in the same prison camp.
Anything happened there?
Nothing. It was just a prison camp.
You're certain he's dead?
If he wasn't, we buried him alive.
You've got to get out of here, Jimmy.
I can't.
You must.
Must.
You'll go spare if you don't.
Oh, don't con me, Steve. You're not really worried about me. You've been told to bring me back, and you'll use any means on hand to do that. You're at it.
All right. So I have an axe to grind. What of it?
It's a pretty clean axe. It's going to hurt nobody. It's going to take you out of this Dracula's den and put you where the lights are brighter. It's going to fill your pockets with lovely, melodious money. It's going to give a lot of people a lot of work and others a lot of fun.
Shut up, Steve.
Look, the book's written, it's only great. The music and lyrics are Rodgers and Hammerstein class. There's a cast that could film a theater if the roof was taken off and the seats turned backwards. And there's a part that's tailored just for you.
No!
The public made you, Jimmy. Don't you feel any responsibility to them?
I have a bigger responsibility here.
Your father?
Yes.
But he's a big boy now. He can probably tie his own shoelaces.
I can't leave him alone.
Are you afraid the kind man will get him?
I'm afraid of a lot of things, but the last thing I'm afraid of is that the kind man will get my father.
Do you know what you're saying?
Oh, don't come on at me, Steve. Why do you have to come here anyway? Why couldn't you leave me alone? I was making it, getting used to it, and then you... Sure, I want to come back. I never wanted to be away. Do you think it's easy when you've been up there just to jack it all in and walk on by? Well, I'm here to tell you...
What are you here to tell me?
The London bit is out. You yourself, Steve, you're welcome to stay as long as you like, but no more London talk. Okay?
It's not, but I'll accept it.
Fine. And now I'm going back to bed. It's been quite a night. Quite a night.
The great thing about daylight is that it at least seems to make sense. It makes sinister houses seem merely shabby. It chases away bats and owls and things with gleaming eyes. It creates colors all over again. It has a quality of antisepsis. I was lying in bed savoring the daylight when suddenly my door burst open and a huge bearded man erupted into the room.
Out of it, Jimmy! Out, I say! Oh, I beg your pardon. I didn't know there was company at the manor.
I arrived too late to make the gossip column.
I might have frightened the life out of you bursting in like that.
Well, you didn't. Why don't you sit down?
In this house? Never. I may on occasion breeze through it like a wholesome wind, but sit down in it? Never. The place has a wonderful accumulated medieval filth. You have a name, no doubt?
Gardner. Steve Gardner.
Should I know it? I mean, are you some sort of celebrity?
I decided not to be. So I'll have less to lose when they drop the bomb.
I grow to love you, sir.
It happens everywhere I go.
Come, Gardner. Hurl yourself from that dingy, grey-sheeted, odoriferous, graveyard-blanketed, brick-pillowed insult to the name of hospitality, and we will take the air together.
If I meet anyone in the long, dark passage to the bathroom, who do I say drag me out of bed?
Say that Romilly Fossard is here.
I've heard of you.
Anyone who can read hairs. Ah, here comes our jolly host. A very good morning to you, Wilfred Morton.
Good morning.
You have all the bright, early quality of chewed grey wool.
I hope you are comfortable, Mr. Gardner.
Fine, thank you.
I'm afraid I didn't sleep at all well. I seldom do.
You always do. You sleep your dormouse way through. Rip Van Winkle from generation to generation in a shabby dream of nothingness.
Why do you come to this house if you despise us all so much?
I come bouncing in and out of this house in a disinfectant capacity.
You rattle yourself.
And in the vague but imperishable hope that your son might even yet be brought back from this living tomb.
Neither my son nor I are interested in your undergraduate therapy.
A fig for you and your preferences.
One day, Foster, you will drive me to kill you.
Come, Gardner. Hurry, man, hurry. The bird of time is on the wing. Soon the tavern doors will be opening, and the mingled scent of malt and new sawdust will be dizzying the Presbyterian air.
Inside the pub, it was cool and clean, and at that time in the morning, we had the place all to ourselves.
Good luck to you, and all who sail in you.
Cheers.
Ah, I love beer. I loathe whiskey. Whiskey always gives me the delusion that I am Attila the Hun.
I shouldn't think you need either. I imagine you can get drunk on words.
My daily consumption of beer is in the neighborhood of 3 gallons.
And you're built for it. What I can't understand is this. Why does a famous character like you bury himself in a place like this?
Gardner, let us here now abandon modesty to the old maids and the secretly modest. I am the biggest literary gun in the country. Therefore, I can shell at long range. I can sit here and pick off all the scribbling little mannequins and minikins, poetasers and versifiers that scurry beneath the smoke of the metropolis.
Is that the only reason?
Frankly, no. I wanted to write a study of a poet called Francis Lennox.
How about that?
You know his work?
I've heard some of it.
I came here originally to gather material for my Lennox study. I have stayed 5 fascinated years trying to understand how such a magnificent blossom of poetry could have been nourished in this little dung heap of a Scottish village. 2 more pints to him.
Right away, Mr. Forster.
How good was Lennox, do you reckon?
The greatest in this century.
Can I get him in paperback?
Oh, yes, with a preface by Romilly Foster.
Too much too soon.
2 pints.
This is mine.
Yep. I was the first to publish him, you know. I was running my magazine, Nose and Thumb, at the time. Lennox sent me some poems. Astonishing stuff from a boy at 16. Perfect. I wrote him an excited letter about them. He sent me some more. They were even better.
Did you ever meet him?
Oh, yes. 2 or 3 times in London.
What was he like?
He was the handsomest man I ever saw. Tall, golden, and masculine. None of this stuffy, what's the point of it all, I opt out kind of rubbish. He was a man. He was honest. He had all the integrity in the world.
And the North Koreans murdered him in a prison camp.
No.
But I understand.
He was murdered in the prison camp, all right. But not, I have reason to believe, by the North Koreans.
I came out of the pub in a daze that had nothing at all to do with Hughie McInnes's prime beer. It was, if you like, a triangular daze composed of 3 voices. First, there was Jimmy.
We went to the same school. We were in Korea together. We were in the same prison camp.
Then there was Jimmy's father.
I am a ghost. Jimmy has become one too.
And finally, there was the whispering voice that had spoken in my ear. The voice that Jimmy said was the voice of Francis Lennox.
You who are alive, who survive, who
The mathematics of luck wakes ten-fingered to counter Private Dawn's blessing. What can you know of the clay and the candle of darkness and the worm's molecular kiss?
Three voices. Two home and one away. Far away. Out of this world, literally. I didn't like the thoughts my brain was thinking, so I took them for a walk through the little town. In the center of the town, there was an odd little oasis, a patch of grass with benches grouped round the local war memorial. Inspector Gordon was seated on one of the benches, reading the names of the dead in World War I. The dead of World War II were noticed underneath, like a postscript to a letter.
A morbid way to spend a lovely morning.
Ah, Mr. Gardner. And how is the wheeling and dealing?
At a standstill.
Oh, but I'm told the times are hard all over.
They're particularly hard down here.
Your friend Morton, I take it, is not being cooperative.
You could say that. I have a problem.
Only one?
It's a big one.
There are all kinds of problems, though. Financial. Marriage.
This is a moral problem.
If you feel you must weep on a shoulder, then I willingly offer you mine. But mind, as a private individual, not as a policeman.
Suppose it concerned you as a policeman.
Ah, then you would have both my private and my official ear. Has the prospect frightened you away?
Can I tell this in my own way?
Oh, please do.
All right, here we go. I told you I was a wheeler and dealer.
You mentioned it.
When I came up here to persuade Jimmy Morton to come back to London, he turned me down flat.
Or maybe he's permanently tired of the rat race.
There's nothing wrong with a rat race. Only the quality of the rats.
But I interrupted you.
You didn't, really. You see, Jimmy enjoyed the rat race, and he wants to go back. So there must be a pretty hefty reason that keeps him here.
Logical.
Now, supposing I'd found out what that reason is.
Which you have done?
Which I have done.
Let's suppose some more.
No, I... Let's forget it.
If you remove that reason, then young Morton will go back to London and you would have achieved what you came up here for, right?
Brilliant.
This is where the problem becomes a moral one, isn't it?
Yes.
What exactly is involved?
Betraying Jimmy. Breaking a confidence.
And bringing the police into the business?
Yes.
People like you, Gardner, have a sort of fifth form morality.
People like me have no morality at all. We just have friends.
As I see it, you have no problem at all. What you do have is a duty as a responsible citizen.
I've heard all this before.
It'll be a repetition.
I'll think about it.
Think about this as well. At the least, you may be obstructing justice. At the worst, you may be making yourself an accessory to something very, very, very unpleasant.
I'll think about all that, too. I left him to resume his contemplation of the memorial's dead names. I could smell the smell of a boat beginning to burn, and it was one of my own. The afternoon was settling in now. Cats in shop doorways soaked up the sun like black blotting paper. The coal merchant was doing his rounds, and every so often a weird dark howl would come from his face. Tiny children were bouncing home from school, smelling of free milk. Now I saw a sign that said County Library. There, I thought, is the place to start the search for Frances Lennox. The girl at the library counter was fair-eyed and bespectacled, but her teeth were good.
Can I help you, sir?
I'm sure you can. I'm looking for a book.
Then you've come to the right place.
I wish I'd said that.
Did you have any particular book in mind?
Any book of poems by Frances Lennox.
Oh, yes, our local genius. We're all very proud of him here. His early death was a great loss to literature.
An irreparable loss.
We only have one book of his. That's to say, if it isn't out on loan at the moment, The Forgery of the Spirit.
Could you check if you have it, please?
Oh, of course. If it's there, I'll fetch it for you.
You're very kind.
Not at all. Won't be a moment. Here it is.
Ah, good. Yes?
Do you have a library ticket?
A library ticket?
I'm afraid I can't let you have the book out without one.
I only want it for a very short time.
Oh, I'm sorry.
My television producer's going to go spare about this.
television.
My own fault, of course. I should have brought a copy of the Pine Luck from London with me.
Are you going to do a television program about Francis Lennox?
Yes, I'm up here doing a recce.
Filming?
That's right.
But here, in the library?
Why not? We could.
And that's what you need the book for?
Yes.
If anything happens...
I'll say I walked out with it absentmindedly.
All right.
You're a doll.
Anything for our local genius.
You like his poems?
Well, actually, I've never read any of them.
I took my unofficial Crown Octavo library-bound prophet without honor out with me into the sunshine. The pavements were hot and the houses baked beneath the high mackerel sky. It was going to be a good day tomorrow, except for those who wouldn't ever see tomorrow. That cheerful reflection took me to the police station and the ironic Inspector Gordon.
Have you decided to tell me, or will you be burned at the stake?
I decided to tell you.
Tell me then.
Last night when I left here, I went to the Morton house and walked into a real gothic setup. Mouldering old house, mouldering old man.
Mouldering young man, too, they tell me.
Yes, and the weirdest maid you ever saw.
Her name is Delia Dewar. What's weird about her?
She runs the house.
Of course she does.
I don't mean in that way.
Then what way do you mean?
Well, she cracks the whip and her masters jump through hoops.
Oh, go on.
Well, like I told you, I came here to excavate Jimmy Morton. So I put the proposition to him. He threw it out, got quite neurotic about it.
So?
So we decided to sleep on it.
Oh, you stayed in the house?
Jimmy insisted. He said I could have his room and he'd sleep in the spare. We talked for a while and then we broke it up. I went to bed and woke up in the middle of the night. Someone was whispering right in my ear.
Delia, perhaps?
It was a man's voice, whispering a poem, something about a candle of darkness.
A candle of darkness?
Yes.
Oh, I like that. And what happened then?
Well, the next thing, Jimmy was bursting into the room. He was near hysterical. I calmed him down, and he told me he'd been hearing this voice for 4 years.
Did he recognize the voice?
He said it was the voice of a dead man. I tried to use the situation to make Jimmy change his mind about London. I suggested the reason he stayed here was his father. I asked him, sarcastic-like, if he was afraid the kind man would grab his father.
Oh, and what did he say to that?
He said that that was the last thing he was afraid of.
Interesting. Very interesting.
I thought it was, too.
The inference being that his father was the kind man.
You make your inferences and I'll make mine.
It's a strange story.
Is that the official way of calling me a liar?
Oh, the official way is to check everything that can be checked. Ghostly voices hardly fall into that category.
But the other thing does.
The other thing does.
Well, where do we go from here?
Well, now, you being in the house...
No!
I was only going to suggest...
I've said my piece once and for all. From now on your own.
You are a character, Gardner. You don't shirk the big betrayal, but you funk all the little ones that are part and parcel of it.
Look, there are the things I want to do and the things I have to do. I get just as confused between them as the next man.
You're just evading responsibility.
Maybe. If so, I'm evading it all the way. I'm not going to spy for you. From now on your own. I left the police station and went down to the sea wall and read some Francis Lennox. I have never been asked to adjudicate the Nobel Prizes for poetry, which is just as well for Francis Lennox. What his poetry did for me was precisely nothing. So I looked at the harbour. Two motorboats preened themselves in the still water, and on the harbour wall, an old man in a blue seaman's jersey was talking to a girl. The old man had a look of Cape Stiff and shipping them green on the starboard quarter, and Barks, jury rigged, limping into port, with himself tied to the wheel. Actually, he was only local color for the tourists, photogenic and phony. But the girl was something special. She was a good deed in a naughty world. And watching her, I forgot Francis Lennox. He was only a dead genius, and she was a live masterpiece. Then I got up to walk home, and I hadn't gone far before.
You left your book lying on the sea wall.
Thank you.
You've got lousy taste in literature.
You reckon?
I reckon.
A critic already.
So you're from London. Big deal.
News certainly does get around fast here, doesn't it?
You're a new face. We don't see many of them.
Well, you don't look local.
I am?
I didn't say you weren't. I just said you didn't look it.
We're international nowadays, the young. Didn't anybody tell you?
What's your name?
Marshall. Lindy Marshall.
Gardner. Steve Gardner.
Hello.
Tell me about yourself, Lindy.
Then what? You'll make me a big star or something?
Well, who's been kicking you around, doll?
Nobody kicks me around.
Is that what you want to be, a big star?
I want to be a writer.
You must be mad.
I know.
These Francis Lennox poems, what's wrong with them?
They're not about anything or anybody. These poems are acting all the time, if you see what I mean.
Yeah. You're absolutely right.
You don't dig them either.
I think they're a load of all rubbish.
A critic already.
Romilly Foster doesn't agree with us. You know Romilly Foster?
Yeah.
Well, that takes care of him, then.
He's a balloon. All that phony Dylan Thomas bit. Young lady, to be a writer is the privilege of privileges. And if the weight of my undoubted influence can push you one small inch towards Parnassus, let my shoulder be your guest.
Then?
Then he made a big swinging pass at me, so I clobbered him.
Come on, I'll buy you a coffee. We went to a dingy cafe run by a sad, limping little Italian who looked as though he had just received a get-well-soon card from the Mafia. And it turned out to be more than just coffee. The girl ate enough spaghetti to stuff a mattress. She ate like they were banning food tomorrow. And when she finished, she looked at me across the checkered tablecloth.
I'm a pig.
When did you last eat?
Who's counting?
I'll mind my own business. Cigarette?
I don't. What's your interest in Francis Lennox?
I'm not sure yet.
I mean, you don't look the literary type, you know.
I'm not.
I talk too much, especially on a full stomach. It's to hide it rumbling.
You know Jimmy Morton?
Oh, I know everybody in this town.
You like it?
Yes, I suppose so. He's very talented. But? I mean, he's sort of gone soft at the centre, if you see what I mean.
Yes, but I'm trying to get him to come back to London.
Huh? Good luck.
I don't know. There's a funny situation going on, and this Francis Lennox thing is part of it. I don't know.
Francis Lennox once worked for my father.
Really?
Hmm.
Do you think I could speak to your father?
He's dead.
Oh, Lindy, I'm sorry.
Alcohol poisoning. I'm telling you because you'll hear it anyway, this being a small town and everything. He was a building contractor. First he drank himself out of business, and then he drank himself to death. End of story.
Did you like him?
Yes. He was a good, weak man who just couldn't cope.
And your mother?
She ran off with some man to Canada. Somewhere romantic like that. Mr. Blamer.
How old are you?
18.
And what do you do?
Nothing special. Anything honest.
I'm here at the moment.
I'm unemployed. And there's a lot of it about.
You live alone?
Yes, I live alone. A dreary bedsitter with a gas ring.
How about friends?
None. The kids here bore me. I mean, the things I'm interested in... Oh, I don't know how to say it without sounding like some... Anyway, the kids here bore me.
So you live alone and have no friends. I don't like that.
Why not? Oh, come on. You're not going on about that kind man jazz.
That's exactly what I am on about.
That's a load of old newspaper rubbish, goose pimples for the mums and dads.
I'm not so sure.
You worry about everybody like this.
Only people I dig.
You'll get premature grey hair. Well, I've got to go now. Things to do, you know.
I'd like to keep in touch.
I drink a lot of coffee here, and if I'm not here, Marco takes phone messages for me.
I'll remember.
Thanks for the meal and everything. Ciao.
Ciao.
Oh, don't sit up nights worrying about me. I can take care of myself.
Ciao. She went off, and suddenly there was a hole in the day. So I called for the bell and paid it. The sad, limping little Italian took the money and gave me change. And all the time he was worrying about that get-well-soon card from the Mafia. I went back to the shaggy, broken-nailed, draggle-tailed, non-mod con horror of a house where the Mortons existed. It was filled with quiet smells, like a family vault. Even to open the door made me feel like Burke and Hare. I stole quietly along to my room. There was already somebody in there, bent in a devotional attitude over my open traveling bag. A praying mantis, enthusiastically praying its way through my belongings. I watched for a moment from the doorway, and then I spoke.
"And just what did you hope to find in there, Delia?"
The second part of The Candle of Darkness, a serial thriller by Edward Boyd. The production was by Eddie Fraser.
In that episode, Steve Gardner was played by Teddy Johnson, Jimmy Morton by Jimmy Logan, Romilly Foster, Douglas Murchie, Wilfred Morton, Leonard Maguire, Detective Inspector Gordon, Mortriar Kelsall, the librarian, Leslie Blackacre, and Lindy Marshall by Hannah Gordon. You can hear part 3 of The Candle of Darkness at the same time tomorrow.